You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, hello, Launch Streeters. Tamara here, your host and fellow innovator. Now, you've heard me say in the past that, you know, yesterday's successes can make you obsolete tomorrow. And it's one of those things that we all, I think, struggle with a little bit. Me too, because, you know, you want success. So what are you supposed to do about it? But here's kind of what I recently kind of realized. Success can be your biggest golden handcuffs that actually lead to your downfall and someone else's success. Believe it or not, it's hard to innovate when you're successful, right? It's hard to change what's working. We always say that, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't rock the boat, right? We have sayings and memes for that. It's hard. Your culture, your employees, your customers, your bottom line, your profit margins, all want you to keep doing what you're doing until something or someone more innovative comes on the scene. Think Kodak, Blockbuster, Sears. They had so much success as things started to shift in their industry. So why bother pivoting? What they were doing was working. Well, I think we all know where that mindset got them. So on Inside Launch Street today, Alan Adamson, author of the book Shift Ahead, shared with us why people, money, and time aren't enough to drive innovation without the culture behind it, and how focusing on optimization alone can accidentally put you on the reactive catch-up path with a competition. He's actually going to share with us how to shift ahead. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Alan. Alan Adamson is a noted industry expert in all disciplines of branding. He's the co-founder and managing partner of Metaforce and the author of Brand Simple, Brand Digital, The Edge, 50 Tips from Brands That Lead, and the one we're going to talk a little bit about, Shift Ahead. Now, prior to Metaforce, Alan was chairman of North America of Landor Associates, a global powerhouse branding firm. I used to follow everything that they did, actually. So I was pretty excited to have him on the show. So, all right, let's get to it.
Alan, thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So what's that one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
I was going to be a filmmaker when I went to school. I made a lot of films in college and found out that I was not going to be Steven Spielberg. So I pivoted and went into advertising, where I got to work on 30-second films.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, advertising is storytelling, just in a different way.
Exactly.
But I have to ask, how did you decide or know that you're not going to be Steven Spielberg? What was a pivot moment for you?
The pivot moment was that I enjoyed doing it, but I was competing against kids who wanted to do it 24/7, and they were really good at it. Well, I thought I was pretty good until you really do something, you don't realize that, you know, it was, for me, it was more of an interest, a hobby. And for the people that were in it, they were in it all the way.
Yeah. It is amazing how, you know, you think, oh my God, I would love to do this all the time. Like, I love to bake. But yeah. Then when I have to bake and I like to do theme cakes, like, tell me what you want, like a Star Trek Enterprise or Millennium Falcon. Like, I love making it. But if I had to do that every day for work, I think I would hate it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to figure out. And so it actually worked out to be pretty well, because I still like telling stories, as you said, and I like figuring out how to tell short stories and get the story really succinct. And it used to be 30-second was a really short story. Now, of course, a tweet.
Right. 3 seconds is a short. Yeah. It's a long story.
And as you know, it's easier to say something if you have forever.
Yeah.
But if you want to, you know, get somebody's attention and tell them something interesting in a really short period of time, you have to think about it.
So I think that's a good segue into kind of why I wanted to talk to you. A couple reasons, really. But I think this was on your website, and you may have even said it in an article too. But you talk about that the number one factor in organizational success is the ability to create and maintain customer relevance and differentiation. Totally makes sense. Hear that a lot. But then you said a second part, which perked my interest, which was, but internal teams often lack critical success drivers. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that the theory of all this is pretty easy. If you're in any business, you've got to offer something different that people care about. And, you know, most people join an organization, somebody's already figured that out. I'm going to make a beer that tastes great and is less filling. And you join the organization, your job is to continue to make that beer. But in today's marketplace, more and more times, that first idea is no longer that different or that relevant. Yet the people they attract in the organization don't have, I don't want to say, it's a bit of a cliche, the entrepreneurial skills or the creative skills to be able to say, all right, what happens if people don't want great taste and less filling anymore?
Right. What happens when things change?
Exactly. And so that's what the tricky part is. The tricky part is, you know, you're there often as a way to optimize what is, and all of a sudden what is not meaningful or relevant anymore.
That's a great way to say it. Do you think that that's a matter of the structure, the processes, the mindset of the organization not being willing to change, or the people going through the motions? Or maybe that's not an either or question.
Yeah, it's probably both. You know, oftentimes a lot of the for Shift Ahead, I looked at lots of companies and found out what was it about those companies and organizations, big companies, small companies, profits, nonprofits, that prevented them from shifting their business ahead and turned them into Kodak and BlackBerry and Barnes & Noble and all the other ones we could list. And, you know, a piece of it was that, you know, they were there, they were brought on to just optimize what was and just make it more efficient, faster. And all of a sudden, if that wasn't necessary or sufficient, those people did not have the skill set, or the organization did not have the skill set to change. I mean, the old time example of Kodak, you know, to some extent it was a chemical sales company, and they had to flip to digital and beyond that. And a lot of the people didn't have the DNA or the skill set to succeed in and the culture of the company was not geared to a digital mindset. And so even though they had some patents and they had some money, lots of money to try to pivot from film to digital, they didn't have the internal culture, skill sets, DNA to really succeed in that market space.
Do you think it's harder to pivot when you're trying to catch up to change versus if you're the one creating it? Because I was thinking about your Kodak example, which I use kind of a lot too. And I mean, I think it's one that we all kind of can wrap our heads around. But they created digital photography, so why couldn't they make the pivot?
It's usually never just one thing that prevents you from doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, in Kodak's case, they had the money.
Yeah, and the people.
And some of the people, but they didn't have the culture. And they also had something that we found out that a lot of companies struggle with. They had golden handcuffs. They were so profitable in film, and Wall Street was holding them to deliver that profit, that the only thing for sure is if they sold one less roll of film and did one more digital thing, their profit would go down because digital was far less profitable. You know, they had optimized, as we just said, they had over 60 years optimized how to make film and get the cost down and distribute it and package it so tight that it was the margins were phenomenal. And so the company was unable to move money from the film group to the digital group, because the film people said, look, I'm making all the money. I want the bonuses. Let's invest in the film business. And the digital people said, look, we're going to have to break even or lose money for 3 years. And the company couldn't make it what the executives there said was an asymmetrical bet. They couldn't move money from the left hand to the right hand. A lot of companies have trouble, you know, starting new businesses because the new is often less profitable than old.
Well, and it takes more time too. The adoption, it's like we forget that Kodak also wasn't successful overnight either. So we kind of forget those adoption curves and those new product curves.
Overnight success doesn't happen overnight. But people, in fact, in business companies, they say, well, in 6 months, we're going to go from being a soup company to being a fresh food company.
Right,
and that's
what's
going on with Campbell's right now. You know, they're really good at putting, chicken broth in cans. But are they good at, you know, delivering fresh organic foods to supermarkets? Not yet.
Yeah, not yet is the key. It's interesting. What you're saying totally resonates. I just wrote this article called Better is Killing Your Business for that exact reason that, you know, we can continue to make stuff better. But the reality is the change is really forcing us to be different if we want to succeed.
Right. And, you know, the companies hire people that are really good at optimization and, you know, figuring out how to make the soup with 4 cents less chicken. But they're not good at invention, you know, it's thinking about what happens if people don't want chicken soup anymore.
Right, right. Which turns out is happening. So
exactly. And they're all for, right. And the other thing that happens is that we spoke to a number of folks at P&G, and I worked with P&G for many years, a great company still, but they described the people at P&G that they get to this massive middle where the middle is so risk averse that, you know, and the answer is never obvious. You look at, do we make chicken soup or do we make pea soup? It's never a 95-5. It's always a 49-51, maybe, or maybe 50-50. And so companies that become risk averse can't decide whether they go left or right, and they end up in the old analysis paralysis, trying to figure out which is right until by the time they're ready to, you know, push the button, you know, they're last in the marketplace and it's too late.
So, you know, I think we're very good at Monday morning quarterbacking and looking
back at
Kodiak and Blockbuster and all these guys and going, oh, but I've no doubt.
I would have done it differently. Yeah.
Totally, totally. But many of us are headed in that direction, don't even realize it. But, right. You know, in your book, Shift Ahead, you actually talk about, and we'll put the link in the show notes for the listeners out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, you talk about the red flags that you aren't shifting ahead. So will you talk a little bit about what some of those flags are? Because, you know, like you, I'm in the business of like, let's avoid the path to irrelevance, but it's so much easier to look back and say, if only, versus to go, wait a minute, we're headed down the wrong path.
Yeah. And, you know, a big chunk of it, of course, is, you know, is that the theory is pretty easy. What becomes really hard is the discipline and the execution. You know, everyone knows that to live healthier, you need to run 6 miles a day and not eat Twinkies three meals a day.
What?
But, you know,
That's the theory,
the theory is hard. And that's the same thing with some of the red flags we found. You know, one of them was just realizing that we all sort of sit in Marty Crane's chair from that old Frasier show. Mm-hmm. We're just more comfortable with yesterday than tomorrow. So we come into where we work, we sit down, we turn on the computer, we get into a habit of doing the same thing every day. And we end up, not realizing it, but most people are comfortable with the familiar. And if it's not familiar, they're uncomfortable. So step one in the red flag is just realizing you're a sitting duck. You know, if you just do the same thing every day, you're going to run into trouble. Another one that happened across many, many organizations is that, and we called it, too many companies, organizations are playing tennis and not golf. And what we mean is, when I was at Unilever, I was, you know, really, I worked in the soap business, and I was talked to consumers, and I thought I was very, as they say in the marketing biz, customer centric.
Yeah, right.
But you know, I recall that lots of my time at lunch or in meetings, we would say, "Hey, did you see what P&G did? Did you look what Colgate is doing?" And we were totally focused on what the other person was doing. The same when I worked with Pepsi. You know, we looked at beverage consumption, but we were just totally preoccupied with Coke. If Coke, you know, dropped a coupon in Cleveland, we spent 2 days discussing. So the same thing. And so when I'm bad at tennis, but when you're playing tennis, you know, when I try to do a little better, I try to hit the ball to where the person's not. I'm really focused on my opponent. However, you know, when I play golf, also terribly, I'm less worried about who's standing next to me, and a little bit more worried about, you know, what is the ball, where's the wind, where are the trees. And so most companies are really too fixated on just looking right in front of them at their immediate competitors. And as everyone knows, again, theory is easy, most disruption happens from the side or from behind you. Gillette, I worked with P&G, and Gillette was laser focused on Schick. Schick had four blades, Gillette had four blades, Schick had five. You know, but
it got ridiculous.
Yeah, but Schick didn't disrupt Gillette.
Right, right. Dollar Shave Club actually disrupted
exactly.
Everybody.
Right. Somebody came out of left field. And so, you know, one of the red flags is if you're spending your whole day just watching your number one and two competitors, you are potentially heading towards irrelevance.
So just on that really quickly, I want to dig before we keep going. What advice do you have then for launch shooters out there who want to go wider, kind of play golf? And I can't play, so I'm hoping that what I said made sense. But, you know, who want to look outside and behind and around and not just at their competitors, but they're bumping up against a system that tends to really focus on that, to your point, right? So, you know, Clorox, whoever it was, Clorox says they dropped a coupon. Oh my God, here we go, right? So what do you do if you're that person?
Well, you know, to some extent, you know, if the organization says, you know, just do what Coke does and that's a good job, you're already in the end zone and falling further behind.
Yeah.
But, you know, to some extent, you know, the other simple thing is, you know, it's been talked about a lot, is that get out of your bubble.
Yeah.
Too often, you know, you're talking to the same people. We find the companies that did better at staying ahead and shifting ahead tended to not hire everybody from the same school. Not,
or even really the same industry, right?
Exactly. You know, to take somebody, you know, when you look at certain industries and you speak to somebody in the pharma industry, is classic.
Yeah.
Everyone has been, you know, four jobs in pharma and they've never marketed anything other than, Crestor. And so part of it is, you know, just, you know, you want to have people on your team that see the world through different lenses and maybe see different perspectives. And if everyone meeting you have is everyone's agreeing, oh yes, this is, you know, if you have nothing but agreement, another red flag. Because you know, it's never easy.
You know, a couple of things. I was just, as you were saying that, the whole industry and the pharma, I was just laughing a little bit to myself because, and I'm sure you get this too, I'll often get phone calls from potential clients and regardless of industry, actually, more so healthcare and pharma for sure, because they're in banking. They're very into industry knowledge.
Right.
So they'll say, we want to bring you in. We want to bring Launch Street in because we need innovation. We need to disrupt. But we need you to have 20 years of healthcare experience.
I'm exactly.
Like, well, I don't. What you're saying is at odds with each other.
And that goes back to the first thing, the Marty Crane's chair. You know, they want people that can talk the biz and talk like them, and and then of course you look back, you zoom out, and what do you see? That if you've done 14 innovation projects for 14 banks, they all look the same.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get out of the way of being your father's Oldsmobile if you do that.
Yeah, and I really like this. And launch readers out there listening, really pay attention to those red flags, because I think that, to your point, they really are indicators of what's to come. If you are only looking at the competition and you are super comfortable and I love your analogy, you're playing tennis, you know, you're probably not on the right path.
Exactly. And you have to get more, this is easier said than done, but when you speak to people who've started great businesses, you need to be comfortable with risk. You know, I had a great interview with the folks at FedEx who talked about Fred Smith, and you listen to some of Fred Smith's early, you know, he said, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I could, you know, lose all my money, but I've already been in the military and I could have lost my life there. So but if you get to the point that you're so scared that if you spend $10, you might lose $10, that doesn't mean you have to be a crazy gambler, but you have to be comfortable with risk.
Yeah. And do you think that with risk, I mean, I think that sometimes the word risk, I think it's a bad rap because it sounds like it's a little bit haphazard. And to me, I think risk can be very smart and it can be very methodical, and I don't think you can minimize risk to the point where it doesn't exist, but I think you can create a process where you test and iterate along the way.
Go
from conference room to launch without anything in between.
Yeah. You have to balance the person that's going to be thoughtful and considerate and take a good bet with a high likelihood of success versus the shoot from the hip. Oh, let's do this. It feels good. You know, let the force be with you.
Knowing that even with all that, it still may fail. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And I do appreciate the Star Wars reference always. I'd love to hear a case study, whether that's a client or just someone out there in the world who you think is shifting ahead well.
You know, the obvious ones are pretty obvious. What we found was when we did the research, not to put a damper on your question, you know, we found that there were plenty of ways you could mess up shifting ahead.
Yeah.
But there were very few ways you could always be successful. You know, we had some good conversations with the folks at Marriott. Ironically, they're having a tough time right now on the security side for your account.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have done a pretty good job, and they are, as they say, leaning into technology and, and realizing that, yes, they have to change. They can't just fluff the pillows and compete with Airbnb. So I think they've done a pretty good job of keeping up. And the other, part of keeping up is making sure you, this is again a cliche, stay close to your company. When we spoke to the folks there, they all follow a lot of what Bill Marriott believed. And one of the things Bill believed was that, or one of the things they said about Bill was his feet never touched his desk. He was never at his desk. He was constantly walking in. There's something called the founder's mentality, which when you start something, you're just really, are you sure you like the taste of this soda? Is it good? Yeah. And you're always out at parties. You're asking everybody, how's that soda taste? And then you get comfortable, your soda's selling, and you just, you lose touch. So, part of what helps Marriott and other companies shift ahead is that if you're always worried about, and a bit of the paranoid only survives from the famous quote from Andy Grove of Intel, you've got to constantly be worried and assume that every day you're a step closer to irrelevance. So you've got to make sure your front line is just out there all the time.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Starbucks is kind of an interesting example to me because they got really complacent. They started to struggle and then they realized it and shifted, which to me is a great example too of, hey, it's never too late. You can shift ahead to the name of your book and the whole, everything we're talking about. So, but they really did recognize and go, oh, wait a minute. Now I'm a fan of always shifting and kind of to your point, like kind of constantly thinking someone's going to disrupt. So it might as well be me. I might as well do it to myself.
Yeah, and you're making sure your front line is empowered to stay close and to make changes. Because, the other signal, again, of a company that is, in real danger, red flag, is if the leadership is behind closed doors and the desk the furthest from the customer. So.
Yeah, seriously. Well, it's – yeah, we can talk focus groups and ethnographies and all that another time and being customer centric. But, I'm curious, you had said in the beginning, you said a few times actually about, we're hired to optimize things and that's kind of at odds in some ways with innovation and shifting ahead and pivoting. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the kind of reality of a lot of people's situations out there, which is, okay, I've been brought in to optimize. I've got a, multi-million dollar brand. It's called I'm in charge of, yet I'm told to innovate. So on one hand, I got to keep this shit moving and working. Things are working. Mm-hmm. I got to keep this moving, yet I'm supposed to disrupt. So how do I balance those two realities of like, hey, I can't take down a multi-billion dollar, million dollar, whatever it is, ship, yet the seas are changing and I got to figure out what to do.
Yeah, and that's always – and that's why some companies, as have struggled with, do you keep innovation inside? Do you move them across the street? Do you move them around the block? In general, though, the people that do better, and that's another thing we found out, is that if innovation is a line item on your agenda, that Thursday we're going to sit down and discuss the future at 4 o'clock. what happens, of course, as everyone knows, is Thursday 3:30, some production problem happens, and you end up, Thursday's innovation meeting gets pushed to Friday, and then it never happens.
Right.
So, part of it is how do you build, a thinking of, zero based, and how do we reinvent something into your daily process of efficiency. To look at everything with fresh eyes. And part of that is a culture thing. Part of it is leadership saying, if you come in with a plan that says we're going to do what we did last year and just optimize, that's not good.
Yeah.
again, easier. All these feel like, five simple steps for New Year's resolutions. And most people don't, they say, well, let's do the innovation meeting Thursday and never do it.
Yeah. And I'm a big believer that, and what really experience has shown me is that really everyone should be responsible for innovation in some way in their work. I think siloing it to the five people with the cool shirt and the cool office is like telling everybody else don't.
Right. Yeah. Once you say that your job is this and somebody else, your job is innovation, two things happen. One is everyone becomes more and more complacent because they go, that's not my department.
Right. It's not my job.
The people that are left in the room with the cool shirts, they're just too disconnected from business and reality. So every idea they come up with sounds like they're, from Mars.
Yeah.
And so you lose on a new product front, and then your existing business slides into Never Never Land faster and faster.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm curious, in writing this book, and just for launch readers out there, it's a great book. I really enjoyed it. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you. And I like I said, we talked about the red flags. To me, that was particularly telling because we always talk about innovation or mistakes in past tense. And I love the idea of making it really tangible of like kind of what's to come. But were there any lessons or surprises as you were doing this research?
This is going to sound like a cliche, but, you know, leadership matters. The companies that didn't have leaders that drove this, you know, pushed against gravity, pulling you into Marty Crane's chairs, tended not to change. And so having leaders that push everyone to think out of the box, to put together diverse teams, to, you know, not spend every day just reading emails, but actually to go to different parts of the country and talk to people. And, you know, we had the privilege of talking to Tom Friedman, who talked about some macro issues. But, you know, Tom's latest book is called Thank You for Being Late. And he talks a lot about his best time is when he's not back-to-back in meetings. And he can just think about it. And in fact, when we spoke to the folks at Facebook, I spoke to Gary Briggs, who is just left as CMO of Facebook. And I guess Facebook could be one of the companies that may need some shifting. But you know, one of the things he said was that when we're working on a mission-critical project, I can clear my calendar of everything. And I can focus and I can, you know, just get out of the routine. So, you know, part of it is looking at the problem and having time to think about it, not just do, because the answer is usually not obvious. It usually requires you to get out and smell the roses in a different field.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This time of year, my client work is less. So I'm not on the road keynoting as much. I'm not with clients in their offices as much. And I am so much more innovative, creative, whatever word you want to use, because I actually have breathing room for once. And I think the unfortunate cycle puts us in when we don't. I mean, the number of my clients, and I'm sure yours are in the same boat, that are double, triple booked through the day is it's unbelievable. And I think the other challenge with that is then we have to move to solutions so quickly that we get stuck in incremental because we don't have the time.
Yeah, and part of it is there's this thing called I'm not sure I named it, but it's a busyness phenomenon.
Yeah.
The belief that the more scheduled you are, if you call up and say, "Can I meet with you?" You say, "Oh, I can see you Tuesday at 2 in 3 months." this person must be very successful.
Right.
So, you know, the notion that if you're multitasking and doing three things at once, and you know, on the phone, emailing and texting and then hand signaling, you're obviously more successful than if you're doing one thing at a time. So, you know, part of it is forcing you as a person even to set up structural things. So when you travel, you know, you can do, I just came back on a business trip and like most, you go from the airport to the hotel to the conference room to a restaurant that it could be, and you can wake up and you don't know what city you're in.
Right, that sounds about right.
And because you're over schedule and you got to be back by 3 and, but if you can try, especially when I travel internationally, to, you know, not just go to the hotel and to a restaurant, but to go to the supermarket, to go to a drugstore, to go to the park, and, you know, try to go to places where you can just observe. Because I think the best marketers are a bit like Jerry Seinfeld, where they have the ability to say, you ever wonder why people – to just look at things and observe – what are people doing? Because they'll never tell you anything. You know, you can ask market researchers, you know, forever in a focus group, but they'll never tell you. You have to watch how they behave and try to structure some time into your day to get out of your bubble and look.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think we, you know, in theory, get it, right? I'm too busy. I don't have time to think. But it really, the productivity that comes out of actual downtime, whatever you want to call it, it makes you more productive on the back end. And that's the thing we have to remember. Mm.
Yeah, even you have to walk a mall. Even walking the mall now tells you that no one's there, which is more interesting than just reading about it.
Right. Oh my gosh, I love walking the mall for that reason because then I'm fascinated by the people who are there, especially in the middle of the day. And I'm like, who are these people? Do they work? Why are they here?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
This is a little bit of an obvious question, but I want to get your kind of view on it with kind of the shift ahead. Lens that you look through. Where does innovation and the ability to disrupt fit into all this?
You know, I think it's the core. It's the intel inside of any business. If you can't innovate, if you can only just do what you're doing, if you can't disrupt what is, And that's why so many big companies have trouble, because, you know, if we launch this, we're going to kill our core business. That happened right. every day. You know, how can we do this? But you have to be willing to say, all right, if this puts us out of business in 3 years, then we'll set up another organization to do it. Because if you don't take that, somebody else will, of course. You know, yeah. P&G could have launched the web-based Dollar Shave Club 100 times.
Yeah.
They had the razors. They had the know-how. They had the technology. They could have, but they didn't.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite examples. I want to take it to an individual level for a moment. How does one shift ahead and stay relevant in their work and life? Not from the company, but really from kind of me and my work trying to, you know, add value and stand out and get it done.
Yeah, I think it's related to the last answer. You know, I try to work with teams that are interesting teams that have done interesting things that are different than I am, that talk to people that are not in your world. You know, if you're lucky enough to, you know, have kids, they're pretty good at telling you you're relevant every day.
So true. And I have teenage boys, so
yeah. Very relevant. When I dropped my son in college a couple of years ago, we were at the airport, I was saying, let me go to get a rental car. And of course, you know, I knew that the world was changing. He looked at me, a rental car? You know, you want to go and take a bus to rent a car? Forget it. You know, let's just Uber it. Yeah. And so, you know, you just need somebody to you have to build that into your life, because if you wait for your son to tell you you're relevant, it's almost too late.
So. Yeah, I caught my 10-year-old trying to swipe the television. We stream everything, and we were watching a football game, right? So there's actual commercials. Heavens no! Mm-hmm. And he was trying to swipe them away, and I was like, oh, honey. We can't do like this.
He'll,
is different.
He'll be able to do that pretty soon.
I know. So. It was pretty incredible, right? It was great. It makes me laugh when I think about it. You know, I think the one challenge we have as humans is we filter the world that we live in, and we do that because we have to, right? There's too much stimulus out there. So our brain makes shortcuts. Our lives are all about shortcuts. And sometimes I think we see things that are really telling of what's to come, but we see it as a blip and we move on. And we don't register it when – I think we need to have our eyes a little bit more wide open to say – and look around and be like, oh my God, look at what's actually happening here. Many, many, many moons ago when the Snuggie, if you remember the Snuggie, the blanket with holes in it, first came out, I remember being in a bar, and this was pre-kids, obviously, and seeing a whole Snuggie bar crawl and being like, what is this crazy infomercial thing that's happening? Like, what? And normally I would have just moved on and been like a bunch of crazy 20-year-olds, whatever. But it made me do some investigation to realize that this was actually this multi-million-dollar thing that had come onto the market. So I think if we actually pay more attention to what's happening right in front of us, we'll see more of the trends.
Right. And, we did speak to a lot of futurists, because part of it is figuring what's around the corner, what's down the road. We spoke to Faith Popcorn. You know, they do some, you know, the obvious thing. They look at the fringes. They look for different cities, different parts of the city, and they look at trends not that are mainstream, you know, but what's going on, younger, different ethnic groups, different parts of the country, different parts of the world. And then how do you fold that in? I had a great conversation quickly with the former CMO of American Express, and he said to help him stay fresh, he created a council where he took the people he was putting in, from Tina Fey to Bono, and he –
These are people who are always on the fringes.
Right. And he said, I want artists, I want music people. And he would meet with that panel. Yes, they were doing commercials, but he would pay him extra to come in and do a work session with his team to just talk to his team of what's going on in culture, what's going on in the arts, what's going on in the world.
That's fantastic. And I would say for kind of people out there listening, you don't have to – get Tina Fey, although how amazing would that be?
Like, well, if you're spending millions of dollars,
fantastic.
Go,
I mean,
go
I would,
for it.
Tina, if you're listening, call me. I would love to have dinner with you. Like, I will pay for dinner and then some.
They can tell you what's going to be the next snuggle idea.
That's right, exactly, right? You never know. But I think there's, you know, if we just went out and explored things that we weren't normally involved in and paid attention, we could find that kind of connection. That's a great piece of advice. So before we run out of time, where can people go to learn more, connect with you, get the book?
They can go to shiftaheadbook.com, and it's there, or Amazon, of course. If there are some bookstores in business, they might be there. Or you can just look me up at alan@metaphors.co.
And the last question for you is, what's one piece of advice you have for launch readers out there looking to shift ahead?
It's what we ended with, get out of your bubble, read a book that has nothing to do with the business you're in and what's right in front of your nose. Go to a movie that you would ordinarily never go to, walk a part of town that you have never been in before, and talk to somebody you wouldn't ordinarily talk to.
So here's my question for you, because I totally agree with what you're saying, and I try to live that every day. I used to go to the grocery store, and in the checkout line, I would pick up the magazines that had nothing to do with me. So like BMX biking, right? Something I have no interest in, to read them. And I would get really incredible inspiration and ideas that came out of it. First of all, magazines are incredibly hard to find, and I don't even go to the grocery store anymore. I get it delivered. So where can I, if I don't know where to go, like how do I find that stuff outside of my comfort zone now that it's not in front of my face anymore?
This is going to seem like an incredibly crazy answer, but one of the organizations we talked to in Shift Ahead was the Greenwich Library. And we said, how can library, who goes to the library to borrow books? And, the Greenwich Library has totally reinvented itself. And part of what they do there is they want to be an incubator. They want to fuel startups. So they have librarians that have information and magazines. And you could spend an hour at your public library and learn more about the world today than you have any idea. Don't just think about the library as a place to get a book that you can get online.
First of all, you're right. Libraries are totally transforming. So people out there who think that they're just a warehouse of books, that's changing. But I love that. That is, I hadn't even considered that. Oh my gosh, I'll go to the library and ask the librarian.
It's the obvious answer, but no, people just, not every library is totally reinvented itself, but I would start there.
But I've truly been stumped of, well, now my magazines and my checkout lines are gone. Where do
exactly.
I go? So this was fantastic, Alan. Thank you so much for this insight. We will put the link to the book and everything else we talked about in the show notes, because it really, for launch readers out there, it's a fantastic book, and it really does help you think about how to build for the future versus just kind of looking into the past.
Thank you so much for including me.
Do you know what I really appreciated about the interview with Alan? Is he gave some real concrete examples and insights into why we really need to think ahead. We need to kind of take this mess that's happening and figure out how to navigate it. Now, if the way Alan innovates, the way he talked about innovation resonates with you, I suspect, much like I suspect with him, that you might be an inquisitive fluid. What does that mean? That means you challenge assumptions and pull back the layers. For you, innovation's in the questions, not the answers. And if you're a fluid, which by the way is a very small percentage of the innovator archetypes, that means that you not only navigate the ambiguity and the mess, but you can create clarity out of it. You create innovation out of that foggy place that we live in during change. And how powerful is that if you unleash it into the world? So like I said, if kind of the way Alan thinks about things and innovates and talks about stuff resonates with you, you might be an inquisitive fluid. I suggest that you go to our website, go to launchstreet.com, click on the assessment, take it, and find out for yourself. Okay, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.